This is episode number 168 with Chris Lockhead. Hi there, my name is Danny Sunshine Bauer, and my mission in life is to help school administrators fight isolation and frustration via a leadership community in order to gain clarity and find solutions to their greatest challenges. I'm also the host of this podcast where each week I share my conversation with top leaders from across the globe to help you accelerate your leadership development. In today's show, I talk with Christopher Lockhead, and we explore a number of interesting topics like the power of authentic conversations and how to have more of them, foreground versus background conversations, how schools can think of themselves differently in order to stand out, and the exact questions to ask in order to become a category king. Today's podcast upgrade is 5 questions that will help you niche down. You can download it at betterleadersbetterschools.com/168-Christopher-Lockhead or click the podcast upgrade link in the show notes page. Thanks for spending some time with me listening to this podcast. I hope you enjoy the show. And before we jump into the episode, let's pause here for a message from our sponsors. A lot of school leaders talk about improving student soft skills to help them succeed in their rigorous coursework. The problem is that most leaders just talk about it without actually doing anything. You can improve your students' non-cognitive skills today by checking out an amazing program called Organized Binder. Learn more at organizedbinder.com. Students who participate in the Conrad Challenge don't learn to think outside the box. There is no box. Learn how innovation takes off and soars beyond the confines of a box at conradchallenge.org.
Hey everyone, this is Stacey Lindis from Podcast PD, a proud member of the Education Podcast Network, just like the show you're listening to right now. The opinions expressed are those of the individual host. Make sure you check out all of the other great podcasts at edupodcastnetwork.com and get ready because the learning begins in 3, 2, 1.
All right. Well, hey there, better leaders. I am excited today to connect with somebody I admire from afar. And now he's on the show. And this, just a pause here real quick too. He's from outside the education industry. And so many of you have been writing in talking about how you want to get the best leadership minds on the show from outside our industry. And so let me present to you Christopher Lockhead, one of the pioneers of the Authentic Dialogue Show category of podcasts. Christopher Lockhead's a 3-time Silicon Valley public company CMO, entrepreneur, and best-selling author. His new book with popular journalist Heather Clancy, Niche Down, How to Become Legendary by Being Different, explores the exponential value of what makes you different versus the incremental value of what makes you better. This evangelist for real conversation brings example after example of legendary people in all walks of life. Christopher has had dialogues, hundreds of remarkable people on his popular podcast, Legends and Losers. And today he's sharing remarkable insights with you to help you niche down and become legendary. Christopher, welcome to the show.
Daniel, thank you so much for having me.
So I think I want to start with the podcast Legends and Losers and the fact that it's known for those authentic conversations. And thinking about the listeners here, right, the school leaders that serve their communities day in, day out, how can leaders engage in more authentic conversations with their people?
Wow, it's a great conversation. The first thing I would share with you is there's a word in the English language that you almost never hear anymore. And that word is conversationalist. And there was a point in time where people would say things like, I want to be a better conversationalist. In other words, I want to be a person who has more skill and capability in sitting down with others and deeply engaging. And for the most part, that's a word you don't hear anymore. And we live in a world where many of us can't go a few seconds without looking at our digital devices. So we're sort of permanently distracted. It's highly unusual in our world today, as you know, Daniel, for two people like you and I to sit here, and I don't have anything taking me away from this conversation. I'm sitting here focused on you, and I believe you're doing the same with me. And then the other thing about a conversation that's powerful is, you know, a conversation is not about me trying to get you to agree with my predetermined point of view, or you trying to do the same, and then one of us sort of declaring victory at the end. That's a very simplistic view, and unfortunately a view that many people have today. A conversation is when two people sit down and they're authentically curious about each other as individuals, about each other's thoughts, ideas, and opinions. And really, rather than having a paradigm of I'm right, you're wrong, or I agree, I disagree, have a paradigm of who I am is curious. I want to get to know Daniel. You have a set of experiences. You have a track record. You've learned many things in your life. And I have curiosity about that. So I think coming from a place of curiosity versus coming from a place of right, wrong, or agree, disagree is a big first step.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And you have to fight that probably daily to say, okay, I'm going to suspend all the beliefs that I already have. I bring to the conversation this context, this foundation in this history too. But let me stay curious, just ask a lot of questions, keep an open mind, and just see whatever comes from this conversation.
Yeah. And the other thing is conversations are sloppy, right? Conversations sure. Weave. In the case of my life, I'm somebody that's, got ADHD. And so lovingly refer to it as chasing zebras down rabbit holes. But most of us are like that. You know, I ask you a question, you ask me a question, we head down a path. For whatever reason, one of us darts to a different path and we're off on something else and probably loop back. But, you know, conversations weave in and out. And there's something for many of us this may sound corny, but beautiful about the natural arc of a conversation. Two people sit down over a coffee or a beer or maybe go for a walk and say, hey, Daniel, how are you? What have you been up to? And then just be willing to engage. And it's a powerful way to learn. It's a powerful way to learn what we're thinking. And obviously, it's a powerful way to connect with others.
Did you find yourself always comfortable being a conversationalist? Or if this is a skill that has grown over time, what have been some of those moments that have made you more comfortable with this sloppy process?
I think, both, to be candid. I'm the kind of person who I can be standing in an airport and somebody will come up to me and just start talking. And so I've always been that way since I was a kid. And as I've gotten older and had more life experience, look, I'm as opinionated as the next person. And I can go unconscious and move into an agree-disagree paradigm super quickly, just like a lot of us. So I'm in no way, Daniel, suggesting that I'm a better human being than most or any other. But that said, I continuously try to teach myself to be curious. I think having a podcast has made me a much better conversationalist.
Yes.
And then the other thing, sort of go back to your original question, my dear friend and mentor, whose name is Bix Bixen, he runs a high-end consulting business that focuses on what he calls future hacking with corporate executives, having them design the future that they intend to have happen. He makes a powerful distinction between what he calls the foreground conversation and the background conversation. And if you think about it, this happens in families, it happens in organizations, it happens amongst friends. There's the foreground conversation, and that's the conversation we have, if you will, in the meeting. And then there's the background conversation, which is the one that we have after the meeting, in the bar, in the coffee shop, or as we walk down the hall and we say, geez, could you believe what, Jimmy said in there? What a moron, or whatever it is. And yet in the meeting, maybe we didn't say anything when Jimmy was acting like a moron. And so that context of foreground and background conversations, we've slid into a world where we value being nice over being clear, over being direct, over being candid, over being, dare I even say, honest with each other. Mm. And so we try to put whipped cream on everything, even when what is being served up is, let me call it, dog poop. And so, and you look at the evolution of language, right? It's like nobody has a problem anymore. They have an issue or they have a challenge, right? We've gotten into this very mealy-mouthed way of speaking with each other. And so there's real power in making a decision to be a person under Bix's sort of construct that says, I'm going to have the background conversation in the foreground, even if it's uncomfortable for me and uncomfortable for others, because the background conversation is the powerful conversation. Now, I'm not saying we shouldn't be respectful with each other and so forth and so on, but at the same time, we serve no one when we are not candid, when we are not clear,
Right. You know, and in the pre-chat, I talked about how conservative and nice educators can be. And personally, I have a goal. I want to get some six-pack abs in midlife, right? And so you can hold the whipped cream, Christopher. So any thoughts on how to have more candid conversations to bring that background into the foreground, knowing the context of a nice, you know, industry in a conservative industry, how do we get more candid and get to those deep conversations that we need to have?
Well, I think we have to ask ourselves, what's my purpose? And if your purpose is to make people feel good in the moment, then say whatever you want to say that's going to make somebody feel good in the moment. And listen, sometimes what there is to do is make somebody feel good in a moment. You know, if I call you and somebody close to me has just died and I'm crying on the phone and I want to share how I'm feeling with you, then you listening to me and, you know, sharing some words of comfort are going to make a difference. So I'm not being naive in saying there aren't moments, many moments, where what there is to do is simply be kind and nice. I'm not suggesting that for a second. However, there are many moments in life where what there is to do is to say to someone, you know what? I respectfully disagree with you. And I'd love to share with you why. And just put it on the table. Mm-hmm. Because people who act one way in front of us in the foreground conversation and then act, say, and do things that are meaningfully different in the background conversation are, you know, full of, let me just say, crap. And nobody wants to be that person. Mm-hmm. And nobody wants to be around that person. And yet many of us make a trade that we say, in order to be liked, we will be disingenuous. However, the people you and I respect are the people who are clear, the people who are candid, and they are the opposite of disingenuous. And so I think we need to task ourselves to be that candid person. And there's a great book about this, actually, by a gal named Kim Scott, and the book's called Radical Candor. And she makes this distinction about how to be very clear, how to be truthful, how to be an admirable person and be direct with people, but do it in a way that's not necessarily, you know, destructive. Do it in a way that's actually very constructive.
Yeah, and Radical Candor is definitely on my wish list. And listeners know that these books mentioned in the podcast, we'll have them all linked up for you in the show notes. And Christopher, speaking of books, you recently had one come out, Niche Down. And can you tell me the story of writing it?
Well, the story of writing it was one of the great joys of my life. I wrote the book with an incredible journalist named Heather Clancy. And I was somebody who, I got thrown out of school at 18. It turns out if you get enough D's and F's, they ask you not to come back. And so I started a company as an entrepreneur because at the time my options were sort of manual labor work or entrepreneurship. You know, nobody was going to hire me to do something based on my potential because it wasn't clear I had any.
Oh, boy.
And at the time, Heather was already a journalist in the industry, a well-known one, a successful one. And so she was literally one of a handful of journalists who taught me the technology industry. And so if you had told that 18, 19-year-old kid, 20-year-old kid that today, you know, I would have a partnership with her and we would have created this book together and not to toot my own horn, but I will a little. You know, when Niche Down came out, it was number one on day one of our launch in both categories we're in. And we've been in the top, you know, 5 to 10 and been back at number one multiple times since Niche Down came out. And so the process of writing it with Heather was a joy. And both of us, I know I can speak for her on this one, have been completely knocked over with how successful the book's been.
I'm not sure if you're familiar with Jesse Cole from the Savannah Bananas. But I think you guys might agree in terms of how continuing to drill down, to niche down, to figure out who you are, to stand out and be different is only going to be good for you as a person, a personal brand, as a business, as a school. And I'm wondering how these concepts, you know, how you might challenge the listeners to think about this and apply it to the education space.
Yeah, it's a great question. So here's the first aha. If you start to look to your own life and you ask yourself, who are the individuals and who are the companies and who are the organizations you most respect that you think made the biggest difference on whatever dimension of making a difference that you say is important. When you start to unpack them, you start to see very, very clear patterns. So by way of example, the vast majority of people, individuals, and organizations that you and I respect tend to be ones who were unique, who had a strong element of originality to them, who broke or took new ground, and who did something that was meaningfully, exponentially different, as opposed to, if you will, incrementally better. And so the first aha is the most legendary people in the world are those people. And those people ultimately become successful because they own a niche for which they become known. So, you know, a simple example that I think we can all relate to is an artist like Picasso. He starts his career off, he paints nice paintings. And it's only until he starts to do things that are meaningfully different and use bright colors and use unusual shapes and re-swizzle the human body and do the kinds of things that he does that people start to pay attention. And so the teaching in Picasso's success is, in order to stand out, we have to design our own niche. And so he becomes, rather than just a good generic painter, which is what most people do, he becomes a different painter. And the truth is, his greatest design is a new niche, a new category, a new genre of painting called cubism. And so the question I think is germane is, who would you rather be in your life? Who would you rather your school or your education, you know, platform be? The 47th cubist painter or the first? And so that's the seminal difference. And so what's the niche that you want to be known for? And it really deals with the question of how do you stand out in a world that's increasingly impossible to stand out. Daniel, I just read this morning that we make on average 35,000 decisions a day. And so if we're not differentiated, if we're not distinct in the minds of the people that matter around us, i.e. we're not known for a specific niche that we can own, that we can be the primary leader in, so to speak. I know you talk a lot about leadership. We have to lead in what? Well, the niche or the category is the what that we're trying to lead in. And if we're just sort of generically trying to be a good school or generically trying to be a good teacher, that's like being a generic good painter. And it's only when you declare a niche that people can then use to differentiate you that your career begins to take off.
And it's there's a fear there. You know, especially as I moved into what I do now full time, right? And really going all in on this niche and trying to serve school leaders at a high level. But even within a local school, you know, there's a fear to be different as well because you just don't want to stick. I think the fear is like a turtle, you don't want to stick your head out too far from the shell. It might get cut off, right? But the problem is when I work with schools on their mission, vision stuff, or even, you know, programs and initiatives that they offer their kids, it's all the same for the most part, right? The staff implementing it might be a little bit different, but the curriculum can, by and large, be pretty vanilla and similar across all schools. And so what I ask leaders is, well, what makes you different? How are you standing out? And and that's the type of the questions we need to grapple with. So as we really try to solidify those categories, Christopher, or niche down, are there questions that you ask yourself or that you would have my listeners ask of themselves to start considering how they can be different?
Yes. The first one is, if you look at, so think about that question that you asked, Daniel, what makes you different? When you ask that question, or when we ask that question of others or ourselves, the first thing I would encourage all of us to do is to literally, I do this myself because I'm a talker, literally bite my tongue so that I can shut up and listen. Right? I try to teach myself to listen.
Right.
And if you listen with some urgency after either you or somebody else asks the question, what makes you or what makes us different? And you listen from a very sort of attentive place, for the most part, what comes out of most people's mouths is a list of things that make them better.
Mm-hmm.
And focusing on better in the context of helping people navigate those 35,000 decisions a day is
right.
actually the opposite of what we want to do.
Mm-hmm.
Because when two people say they're better by definition than each other, by definition, one of them's lying. And if you think about it in the context of a consumer, and just think about something simple, gum. Let's say you like gum and gum A says we taste better than gum B. Well, now I got to figure out who's lying. Right?
I have to take time and taste both.
That's right. And in a world of 35,000 decisions a day, we don't want to make decisions. Yep. We just want to know, how should I understand you? So I'll give you a simple example. If you and I live in this beautiful town of Santa Cruz, California. And so imagine you were here visiting and I said to you, Daniel, hey, maybe tonight I was thinking we could go to one of my favorite local restaurants, Gabriella's. What's a likely first question you would ask me about that?
Why is it your favorite?
Okay, that's a good question. And the other question that would be obvious would be, what kind of restaurant is it?
Mm.
And when we ask that question, what we're really asking is, what niche is that restaurant? And when I say to you, it's an Italian-American restaurant, you get a context for how to slot that in your brain.
Mm-hmm.
And so you and I as human beings, the way we make sense of the world is we got to have these filters in our head, these folders, if you will, that allow us to understand. There's this mega category called food. There's a subcategory of that called restaurant. And there's a subcategory of that called Italian restaurant. And there's a subcategory of that called Italian American restaurant. And so what happens is, first I explain to you what it is. And then we go to the brand. Well, is it the number one Italian American restaurant in Santa Cruz? And so we go to category first, brand second. And so if you think about it in your career, it's what you're known for that matters first, not your quote unquote personal brand. The fact that I know your name, if I don't know where to slot you in my head in a world of 35,000 decisions a day, I won't know even where to slot you. And so even if I've heard, you know, Daniel's name 1,000 times, if I don't know that you're the leader in podcasting and you're the sort of thought leader for how to run a legendary education organization or school, then you can scream your name at me, but in a world of 35,000 decisions, I probably won't pay attention. And so to get back to your question, there's this weird dichotomy in life, which is it's what makes us different that makes the difference. And we live in a world that teaches us the pathway to success is about fitting in, when in point of fact, it's about standing out.
Yeah, it's powerful. You know, I'm just thinking about that, even in the context. It's a big aha for me is just the 35,000 decisions that we make, you know, a day. I've read some other articles with similar numbers, some a little more, right? Heightened for leaders for what comes across their desk. And that's who we're talking to right now with the podcast. And so those categories become helpful just because otherwise you're so irrelevant because I don't know where to put you, right?
That's exactly right.
And it's like mental exhaustion or fatigue. So to have that category carved out and then to have everybody understand, you know, what that's all about is paramount to success. And it's by being different in order to own that category. I think that's some real good food for thought for the listeners to ponder. And Christopher, let's pause here for just a second for a message from our sponsors. Today's show is proudly sponsored by Organized Binder, a program which gives students daily exposure to goal setting, reflective learning, time and task management, study strategies, organization skills, and more. Organized Binder's color-coded system is implemented by the teacher through parallel process with students, helping them create a predictable and dependable classroom routine. You can learn more and improve your students' executive functioning and non-cognitive skills at organizedbinder.com. And so we're back with Christopher Lockheed of Niche Down, the wonderful book that's now out. And we've been talking about owning categories and how to be different in order to stand out and be a success. Before we sort of wind down the interview, Christopher, is there anything that we could have addressed within the book that you'd like to mention here before wrapping up the podcast?
I think the other big thing to think about is fall in love with the problem, not the solution. So most innovators, educators, artists, entrepreneurs, scientists, et cetera, they're very fired up about the solution. So if you think of, you know, if I'm a school principal and I meet and you meet me at a cocktail party and you say, oh, hey, what do you do? And I say, hey, I'm the school principal. And you say, oh, that's interesting. You know, tell me about your school. What I'm likely to do, what is sort of the most natural thing for most of us is to tell you about, oh, you know, well, we have a number of students and this, the school is here and, you know, we teach these sorts of things and we have this after school program or whatever the thing is. I go and essentially have a product feature-like discussion around my quote-unquote, if you want to call it that, education solution. The simple aha, nobody buys a solution unless they have a problem. Mm-hmm. And so legends focus on what problem do I solve? Why is that problem important? Why is that problem valuable? And the more urgent, the more valuable, the more critical the world believes the problem I solve is, the more time, money, attention, and focus they will put on that problem. And so legendary category designers, the people who are able to niche down, design a niche that they can own, focus on that. What's my problem? What do you think is missing in the education system? What do you think is missing as a grade 3 math teacher or whatever you are? And why is your, and I'm going to use this word very much on purpose, Daniel, point of view about mm-hmm. that problem unique and important? And if you're able to evangelize your point of view in particular about the problem, then people will get fired up about solving that problem. And by definition, they will look to you to solve that problem, because the way the human mind works is if you're somebody who educates me about a problem yes. in a powerful way,
yeah.
I naturally assume you have the solution, right?
Yeah, I love it. It's crazy how that works, but I love it. Yeah.
And so the most legendary innovators, scientists, teachers, entrepreneurs, artists, creators of any kind continuously ask themselves about the problem. And then when people talk to them, they, sure, of course, they talk about their solution, but they really focus on their problem. They are, if you will, on a mission to have the world pay attention to that problem.
I so appreciate that perspective, that point of view, to fall in love with the problem more than the solution, because, and maybe it's because of my background, obviously, in education, I feel like we just have a leg up on every other industry you would join, since you're working with the raw material that literally builds our future. And so the problems that we can solve within the education industry, in thinking about loving the problem more than the solution, that just unlocks so much potential and creativity and possibility in my mind. We have to finish the podcast, but I want to go journal on that for the next, you know, few hours or something.
Well, yeah, I would ask all educators to think about, what's the problem we're really solving?
Exactly.
Is the problem graduating more kids? Is the problem getting more people to do well on the LSAT? Or is the problem, how do we produce adult human beings who are happy, successful, and productive in the world? Or any other way to look at it. But here's what I do know. The way we frame the problem changes everything.
Yeah.
Einstein famously said, if you gave me an hour to work on a problem, I would work on that problem for 55 minutes and the solution for 5 minutes.
Exactly. It's about asking the right questions and doing the due diligence, the prep work, the question. Yeah, it's all in the preparation and then the 5 minutes of that solution. That's awesome, Christopher.
Yeah. And then when you connect the problem to the difference you want to make and you sort of tie it all together with a provocative and engaging point of view around, you know, mostly the problem and, of course, signaling to, therefore, what the solution is, all of a sudden, whether it's talking to a student about their own path in life or whether it's about how do I, as a school leader or principal or wherever I am, how do I market this school, whether it's externally in the community to attract the kind of students I want, or whether it's how do I just fire students up about their own education. if they relate to the problem in a powerful and personal way, they're going to want the solution. And that's really how you niche down.
Mm-hmm. That's powerful, listeners. I hope you're taking notes here or replay this podcast, because the way we approach this potential that we have within the schools, Christopher's given you a masterclass and some of the questions and the mindset shifts that you can have as a leader to really unlock greatness within your organization. Well, we're wrapping up. This is the last question, Christopher. You've made it. You're an amazing guest. I'm so happy that we've connected. The question is this: you're building a school from the ground up. You're not limited by any resources. Your only limitation, Christopher, is your imagination. How would you build your dream school, and what would be your top three priorities?
I love that question. Thank you. So obviously, I'm not an educator in any kind of a traditional sense. So I would look to people in this world that I respect and admire the most. And one of those people is a physician named Dr. Daryl Treffert. And Treffert is considered by most people to be the leader on autism, savantism, particularly acquired savantism. And his school, the Treffert Center in Wisconsin, is an extremely incredible place. And by way of context, he was the consultant that the makers of Rain Man used to make sure that Rain Man was authentic as it relates to people who have autism. Mm-hmm. What he has shared with me is the paradigm they have at the Treffert Center for kids is what he calls a strength-based approach. And as somebody who, I have dyslexia and four or five other diagnosed, quote unquote, learning differences, the aha for me is that not all of us learn the same. And obviously, just like we have different bodies, we have different minds. And just like you may be physically capable or more drawn to certain things, and I may be more drawn to other things and so forth, the same thing is true around how we learn. Unfortunately, we have designed, for the most part, a one-size-fits-all education system. Now, there are definitely a set of things that all of us need to learn how to do. But for example, for me, math was over in grade 3. And I'm able to navigate life with a grade 3, or actually probably closer to a grade 2 level of math skill. And so maybe it's not important for me to understand fractions. So there's a baseline level of skills we all need. However, once we sort of figure out what those base skills are, if you say the job of the education system is to produce a happy, successful, productive human being, then how do we figure out what that child or individual, if they're not a child anymore, what are their strengths? Dr. Treffert calls them islands of intactness. And he says, how do we love and nurture those? How do we find out what Daniel's strengths are? Mitigate his weaknesses to the degree to which we need to, and prop some of those up. I think there's real legitimacy in doing that, some base level of math by way of example. But let's say maybe you're a much more creative person, or you're a much more analytical person, but in a non-traditional way, or whatever the case may be, or you're a very athletic person, or whatever it is, then let's double down on those things. Because the real job that we have as human beings, and I think a big part of the job of the education system, Daniel, is life is all about figuring out who I am, what I'm naturally drawn to, what I'm naturally not drawn to, where I can be successful, where I can't be successful. It's an ongoing process of self-discovery in that regard. And by age 18, plus or minus, we all have had to have discovered one or two or three things where we can excel, where we can be legendary, where we can stand out, where we can have real success. And people who don't figure that out by, plus or minus 18 years of age often have really big problems in life because they don't know where they fit in. And not only do they not know that where they fit in, they don't even know that maybe they can make their place as opposed to just find their place. And so I think all that is to say that I would want to design a school that is focused on a strength-based approach that allows people to discover their place in the world. And for those of us who can't find a place in the world, gives us the tools to make our own place in the world.
Christopher, thanks so much for being a part of the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast. Any parting words of advice, and what's the best way to get a hold of you?
My parting advice would be follow your different. And the best place to get a hold of me is legendsandlosers.com.
Better leaders, thanks for investing in yourself today by listening to this podcast. Remember, life's 10% of what happens to you and 90% of how you react to it. Go out there today and be a better leader. Today's podcast was brought to you by Daniel and Christopher. Head over to betterleadersbetterschools.com and type Christopher in the search bar. The show notes page will pop up. You'll get highlights of today's episode, links to all the resources, and the best way to connect. Christopher, thanks again for sharing your leadership insights and helping the better leaders be better.
Thank you, Daniel.
All right, better leaders, just a few more things before you take off. I created a new resource for you called The 3 Leadership Questions I Ask Every Day. You can download the resource by visiting betterleadersbetterschools.com. If you enjoyed today's episode, make sure you subscribe, rate, and review the podcast. This helps me in a few ways. It gives the show some social proof. It encourages new people to listen to the show, and it improves the ranking of the show and therefore helps me serve more school leaders. If you want extra credit and some good vibes, share your biggest takeaway from the show and tag me on Twitter and Instagram. My handle is Alien Earbud, an anagram for my name, Daniel Bauer. And make sure to use the hashtag BLBS. This Sunday is the weekend resource. Join over 3,000 school leaders that get this resource delivered every week. In the weekend resource, I share content curated specifically for school leaders. You'll get articles, videos, templates, and exercises, coaching tips, inspirational quotes, invitations to free Friday group coaching, which is an exclusive offer made available only to newsletter subscribers in the Better Leaders, Better Schools tribe, and links to all the content I created for you this past week. You can subscribe at betterleadersbetterschools.com/weekend-resource. And remember, life is 10% of what happens to you and 90% of how you react to it. Go out there today and be a better leader.